Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Normand Night Show, coming to you live from Bowie, Maryland. We're still coming out of Bowie because I'm still looking for another place to take the show. We're going to have a good time tonight because, oh my gosh, here in Bowie, the power is back on. If you got any horror stories, you want to give us a call and tell us about the power outages. You can always reach us at 347-945-6713. That's the call-in number. That's 347-945-6713. And I'm going to get a chat room open here right now. I'm doing the small one right here with me. We got the room. Norm is in the chat room, and the show is live. What are we going to talk about tonight? Well, we sure could talk about the heat, because my God, it has been hot in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. But if you want to talk about the heat, you know the number, you know the chat room. If you put something in the chat room, I'll get it on the air if you don't want to say it yourself. But 347-945-6713 is the chat number. You might want to try Skyping in if you got Skype. I use my Skype as often as I can. I really like Skype. But it's been a semi-interesting week in the political world here, and we do like politics on the Normand Night Show. We sure do. But tonight, everyone knows Norm is a school teacher, or has been a school teacher, for the past 30 years in the independent school world. And I love talking about school. Well, if you're a regular listener, you know that. I'm out on the ratty fringe, I would guess, or some people would tell you. And when there's a friend of mine from St. Mary's High School in Annapolis said, watch out when I get in full norm mode. I'm not in norm mode tonight, but I will tell you something that I would like to talk about that a good friend of mine who I'm hoping will call in tonight and I were discussing, and that was, why did school used to work? And, you know, why did we turn out okay when we went to school under the old paradigm? And I say we turned out okay in spite of what we did. We're going to talk about that tonight. If you got some ideas on that, 347-945-6713 is the number. Something that they've been yapping about all week. The governor on one side of the issue, the president on the other side of the issue. Excuse me. What are we going to do with the... Hey, 703, you're on with Norm. 703, you're on with Norm.
Hey there, bud. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing real well. How are you doing?
I suppose I shouldn't listen to this show because of the delay. Right?
You shouldn't listen to the show. Why?
Because I'm hearing myself on delay.
you're hearing yourself.
Yeah, I'm hearing myself on delay, and it's weird.
Oh, it is weird. And you, are you using your phone? Yeah, you are using your phone.
What?
You're hearing yourself on your computer.
Yeah, right. So you got to turn that off.
Well, yeah, because you'll hear the whole show through your phone. You just mute your speakers.
Yeah.
And then you'll be okay. I was just telling the listeners out there, hey, I think the cult just checked into the chat room. Hey, guest 1477, is it the cult? I hope so, because I wouldn't want the cult to miss. There's probably going to be some fireworks tonight. But anyway, we'll just let you listen along there, 703, and that's how I'll refer to you, because I don't like using names.
That's right. I'm just a number.
Just a number.
Right.
So
why isn't education working?
You know, education isn't working because it's not about learning anymore.
It's not? What's it about? What is it? What do you think it's about?
No. I mean, this is just my view, but I don't think most teachers know anything.
Well, that's a wild generalization, Norm. Come on. Most teachers.
Well, I've been doing it for 30 years. And only they know a whole lot about teaching. They know a whole lot about classroom management. They know a whole lot about brains. They know a whole lot about Alan November.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do they know anything about arithmetic? Do they care about arithmetic?
Well, I think they do, but I think they've been sort of led down a garden path where people keep changing the way things are being taught. And when you went to school, when I went to school, things were taught a lot more simply, and they're not. Now everybody's got a new theory of how to teach math or history or whatever it is. And as I said to you in another conversation, it's the publisher-perish thing at the ed schools where people have to keep coming up with new goofball theories. And the other thing that dawned on me that's influencing it, it's the textbook business. Because I think Euclid does just well with geometry. I don't think you need a 9-pound book with all sorts of stuff in it, and pictures, and you know. But you can't make money on Euclid, so you got to come up with your own.
You know, it's really interesting. At another school where I was teaching, I met a guy. He went to St. John's College in Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And he was teaching math, and he was teaching geometry to 10th graders. And he said that same thing, and he simply got Euclid's book.
Right, you know, he invented the thing.
Wait a minute, help me, I forget what it's called.
Elements. Yeah.
He got Euclid's Elements, made a copy for every kid, and that was their textbook.
Well, there hasn't been a lot of new stuff about straight lines since 3rd or 4th century B.C., you know, so he probably did the right thing. No, you think about the economy of textbook production. Why do all these textbooks go through the 7th and 8th and 9th and 10th editions, and then, because everybody has to buy a new one. And when they approve the 10th edition, the 9th edition is not acceptable, and you've got to get that 10th edition. And particularly in the world of public schools, that means sales of thousands of books, I think. And so they think.
But it's really interesting. The textbook industry, I just read a piece on a blog comes out of Canada. The textbook industry has been hurt so badly in the last year that there's actually a decline in paper sales.
I don't know that. I didn't read what you read, so I don't know
even,
that.
Even, why can't I think of his last name? I'm just never very good with names. God, I read his letter. I've been reading his letter every day for the last 5 years. It'll come to me. But I think a real problem with school is nobody asks the kids what they want to know.
Well, I don't think that's always the question you can ask them. I don't think they know what they want to know. I think a lot of them want to know what's going to be on some kind of test. I think a lot of them don't even want to know. They don't even want to be there sometimes, you know. So.
Well, then why should they be?
Well, they should be there, I think, because some of the great thought of our civilization is worth contemplating and worth questioning and thinking about. And
you know what? I agree with that, you know, 1,000%. You know I agree with that. And the reason, how many calculus teachers out there do you think ever talk about calculus as one of the great achievements of the human mind?
I don't know. I would say my guess would be few. And my guess would be few about almost every subject. Because
what do you think the administration would do to a teacher who just stopped to wonder and speculate with the class, how come Newton is exploring giant space and he invents this system that we call the calculus, and then you go over to the continent and you got Leibniz examining small space, and he comes up with the same system.
Mm-hmm. No.
How did that happen?
I think the calculus is clearly one of the great achievements of civilization, and I think all of the things are. You know, I think Hamlet is one of the great achievements of the civilization.
Just so everybody knows, my caller knows something about this stuff. You'd call him an expert, actually.
But I have always felt from the time that I was in school and just watching people, I think one of the things that does happen is the teachers get so wrapped up or, you know, they're almost pushed to get so wrapped up in the process of doing this thing called education that they don't ever stop and think. You know, I always wish that if someone had taught me chemistry by starting to say that a lot of what we're going to do this year is about the fact that atoms can share electrons and some can share them with specific other atoms and it makes different chemical entities. You know, if someone explained it that way, or if someone said, you know, that algebra is about the equal sign. It's about trying to arrange stuff on either side of an equal sign and figure it out. But I think they go right into it. They go right into lesson one, and we've got to teach them about this and negative numbers, and then we've got to teach them this. And, you know, the usual routine. And I think I wonder how often teachers think about what it is, what the discipline itself bloody is. And I don't know that happens that much, you know. I think I've always felt that there was a sense where they just accept the idea that there's this thing called history or English or whatever it is, and we got to cover this stuff, and that's what we're going to do, you know. And there's something to be said for covering the stuff.
I don't think there is ever anything to be said for covering the stuff.
No,
and I think that's the problem.
No, I don't. I don't think it's the problem. I think it's the problem is they never stop and ask the question, how are we covering this stuff, and what kind of stuff is it we're covering? You know, because we're covering something different in history than we are in literature, and we're covering something different in mathematics than we are in either of those two, and biology, and on and on and on. And it's the question of, you know, it's just a basic question: what is this discipline, and what do we do in this discipline, and why are we doing it? And what, you know, those kinds of real fundamental, to me, they're very fundamental questions, you know. And
that should always be asked at any level.
Yeah, but I say, I think, you know, there is this, there's this mindset to say we got to start into chapter one right now and get in there and do it without saying kind of what is it we're doing and what are we doing it on? You know, what are we working with here and why are we working?
That's right. How often have you ever been in a history class and the teacher says, what's history?
Right. I think,
and
you know,
in fact, of all the history teachers I know, there's only one I know that does that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't get to see what history teachers do, but I think they just accept there's this thing called history, and it's all the stuff that happened in the past, and we're going to cover
it. Everybody accepts there's this thing called poetry. I mean,
right.
why do human beings write in verse?
They don't always.
How do you download stuff from HBO?
They don't always.
Well, but why did they? Why is Beowulf a poem?
Because it does poems.
Why did Shakespeare write in iambic pentameter?
Well, because it's probably the metrical line that most closely approximates the rhythm of the English language as it exists, you know.
So did he decide that, or did iambic pentameter come from what he wrote?
Well, no. There were people that were writing in that form before he wrote in that form. He wasn't the first.
Well, there are some that claim they wrote for him.
Well, that's another bunch of crackpots. So it's just, those people
You wouldn't even go see that movie with me.
I don't know what movie it was.
I never actually went to see it.
I don't know what it was. What was it?
The movie about the Edinburgh? The guy who they thought wrote it.
Well, everybody has crackpot theory about that, you know?
Yeah, another crackpot theory. Here's a question I have, though. When does Shakespeare become non-relevant to us?
I would say never.
Or does it ever?
I would say it never becomes non-relevant to us. I mean, I believe that all of the different disciplines, subjects, whatever you want to call them, what term you want to give them, I think every one of them is a way of knowing something about the world and our place in it and the stuff that's in it and how it works. It's always about the same thing. It's just coming at the world from different points of view, you know.
And so why don't we do that in school?
Well, I think people try to do that in school. I mean, but I'm saying
I don't think they do.
No, I would agree with you. I think
there are some people who do that.
Right. And there are many, many more. There are many,
about
many more.
College.
What?
That's what thrilled me about college. About some of high school.
Right.
And maybe even a little elementary school.
That's what ought to thrill you. But I'm saying, I think the majority of people who do this teaching thing, you know, in some of the school districts in this country, someone can go teach English with 24 credits in English. How much do they know about English? You know, how much thought have they ever given to it all? And I think that what happens is they just say, well, we've got to get this, we've got to talk about this, or we've got to read this thing by Shakespeare, you know. And I don't think they ask themselves the question, what is it about this thing that Shakespeare did? What makes it different than what the, whoever composed Beowulf or Virgil's Aeneid, or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, it's just, I think that they don't question those, the basic things, you know, they assume them or something, and they assume it's English and you have to take it, and I'm going to teach it, and that's how I'm going to do it.
That's right. You look on a school's webpage, you will have 4 credits in English and 4 credits in math.
Right.
Well, and why is it never taught together?
Well, I think sometimes it's difficult to teach those different things together. They don't always go together, you know.
I think what happens is there's too much concern
for the process. There's too much concern for the teaching process as opposed to trying to spark a kid to say there is some wonderful value in understanding the organization of something like Euclidean geometry, to say this is a way of measuring and understanding your world. Okay, nobody does. Nobody starts that simply. They right away just want to jump into, you know, a straight line as an imaginary thing between 2 points, or, you know. Okay, that's all true.
Well, let me ask you could do that in first grade?
Huh?
You think you can do that with first graders?
I'm not sure. I don't know enough about the pedagogy of first graders, but to say, you know, can they understand an imaginary line? Because first grader is going to be pretty literal. He's going to think that thing on the page.
Most of them have imaginary friends.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
But I'm saying it's too easy to look at that and say, well, that line's there. That's a line because they drew it. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Where can they understand the sophistication of that it's an imaginary thing and exists as something in a relationship between points as opposed to the line on the paper? I don't know. I just say I don't know enough about first grade minds and what they're capable and not capable of, you know. But all I'm saying
for whatever reason, tomorrow you're in first grade. What do you do?
What do you mean, what do you do? Well, you try and figure out a way to maybe get some of those ideas across.
You're 24 first graders. What do you do?
I say you try your best to figure out a way to try to explain that stuff as it really is, as opposed to, well, you drew a line on a paper, but that thing doesn't exist. That's just something you put there. It doesn't exist. That's not what the line is, you know. But I'm just saying, I think if we all stopped and thought more about why is history one way of knowing the world, and literature is another way of knowing the world, and philosophy is another way of knowing the world. They're all ways of understanding the world and us and our relationship to it. And I just can't help but feel that we don't think those kinds of thoughts enough. We try to think about the content of Huckleberry Finn or something, as opposed to why is the novel of Huckleberry Finn different than some sort of a historical treatment of runaway slaves and the South and
the Mississippi River.
Yeah. You know what I mean? They're different. They would treat them differently. And both are, one is no more valid than the other necessarily.
Do you think you could teach a contained classroom?
That I could what?
You could teach a contained classroom. You teach all subjects to that group of people.
You mean like a one-room schoolhouse kind of thing?
Yeah. But
yeah.
It's high school.
I suppose I could. Why wouldn't I? I don't know.
I think you could.
Well, I think I could too. But I'm saying, I think we have in this pressure to kind of reinvent so many things. You know, the you don't reinvent the various mathematical systems, not at the level of normal kids. You know, at some kind of beautiful mind level you do. You literally understand numbers and the relationships in different ways. But I'm talking about, you know, the basic kinds of numeracy where people learn how to manipulate numbers to get answers to things. You're not pushing that, you know, that really high level philosophical math button, but you're trying to say there's something useful and something interesting, just fundamentally interesting, about knowing the way numbers can tell us things about the world that we would not maybe think that we would know, you know. And I think, but so much time is spent in the ed schools by the teachers in the ed schools, the professors in the ed schools, who are in that under that gun of publish something new, come up with a new way to teach, I don't know, multiplication or, you know, some, and they come up with these new illustrations and all this sort of stuff, and it's not the way I learned those things. Some of those things I just learned in the old fundamental ways, you know. But
what if there were no ed schools?
I don't, you know, honest to God, I have a hard time justifying the existence of those things, you know. Like, I don't know, when I was in school.
Do you know anything about the history of how they came about?
Ed schools?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know, like, when did they
actually
start?
Actually, they were called normal schools.
Teachers' colleges, yeah.
Well, that came after the normal school.
But I mean, there were, the idea behind
it. The idea was that they were just sticking people in these public classrooms, and they had no idea, you know, it was to somehow credentialize the teachers as knowing something.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So how do we do that?
Well, you know, like all kinds of things, it starts out with the simple idea of, well, let's make people pass some sort of basic competency in teaching something so they can go in and teach a school somewhere. And then it becomes, you know, it starts to gradually drift and become some kind of an industry or an institution, you know. And I think these... I don't know, my children have gone through so many phases of new math and new math part two and all the rest of it, and it just, you know, my fundamental question is, it's sort of like, if all these great theories that they're trying out are working, why don't we do that well in the world? Why are we not?
Well, we don't do that badly in the world.
Well, but I don't think we do that well either. I mean, we're not the top of the heap, and we spend an awful lot of time playing with it and theorizing and changing it.
You know, that's a big issue in the current election.
What is?
You know, are we the best anymore? And you know what?
What?
I don't think anybody's better than us right now. And I don't think anybody right now could kick our ass.
I don't know.
I mean, of course, you know, nobody thought that the United States was going to kick the Spanish ass in 1898.
Yeah, I'm not that enthused about. You understand, Norm, that in a presidential election, everybody has to think America is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Because if you say anything else, you're pretty negative and. People don't like that, you know, so. But I don't pay much attention to that political rhetoric as making decisions on whether we're doing the right thing or not. I mean, I'm just saying that we're not as good as a lot of other nations on Earth appear to be in terms of things like math or science or reading or whatever. We don't do it that well. And the question that I continue to ask myself is, if we spent this much time theorizing and inventing the new math and the new math and all the, why are we so good in math? I think there's something that's not happening that ought to happen. And I don't know what it is precisely, but maybe it's a, more discipline about it. Maybe it's...
I believe the real problem is that it's not connected to the world.
I don't know about that. When you look at all these, the new goofball math books, you see all this stuff tying it to real world issues. You know, they're always trying to integrate that stuff into mathematics these days.
But I'm talking about the kids. It's not real world. They don't divide marbles among themselves in marble games and all the kinds of things I did. I don't remember very much, especially in the lower grades, of how Sister Mary Christmas taught me math. But I remember keeping, being the treasurer of the Kermit Avenue Tropical Fish Club and keeping track of all the dues.
Right.
And I remember making the notebooks to keep track of who paid me on my paper route.
Sure.
Nobody does that anymore.
I don't know.
I don't need paper routes.
I don't know what...
I remember I wanted to learn something about accounting. I'd never taken an accounting class. I didn't want to. But I just went and got an accounting book and started reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated by the idea that accounting is a model of a business.
Sure.
And that these numbers, it was like a baseball box score that was telling me about the game.
Right.
And a baseball box score is enough to make you drool.
Some people.
Well, okay.
But, no, you're right about accounting. The thing about accounting is that someone who understands the world of business can look at somebody's accounting statement and say, you better figure out something new here pretty quick or you're not going to be around 6 months from now. I mean, they can see that right in those numbers. They can. I'm getting calls, you know. I've got to run.
All right. It's
been fun talking.
Thanks for coming on.
All right. Maybe I'll come back. I'll see you.
All right. We'll be here. I'm waiting for the count. And thanks, 703. That was a great conversation. I really appreciated that. But that whole idea of knowledge being a way, or subjects being a way of looking at the world, you know, and how stuff comes apart and comes together, I really hope that caller comes back, because that was, there wasn't even much of a rant from the Normmeister during that whole idea. Colt, I hope you're out there. I hope we hear from you. Why did school used to work? Excuse me. I had some coffee and it's making me burp. And models. How many people out there like to build models? Okay, well, I think everybody knows I'm a model railroad wacko. I love model railroading. I love model car racing. I love alternate realities. I love doing things outside of my own reality. One of the things, and I don't know, maybe it's a flaw with me, but I've never actually been off the North American continent, yet I feel absolutely that I've been all over the world. I've commanded armies. I've run political campaigns. I've been a candidate for office. I've had businesses. Well, actually, I ran several businesses. I have a problem with scaling. I admit that. I've never been anything really big, but I always liked ideas. And for whatever reason, sometimes, I've always wanted to be a writer. I always thought I could be a writer. I never did. Well, I'm writing now. And I'm actually coming up with some interesting stuff. Hey, we got a call here. Hey, Colts, how you doing? Colt? Hey,
computer. So what's up to tonight? I'm doing pretty good. I'm not hearing you very well. Let me change ears.
Sorry.
Yeah, dealing with 104 degrees today, but hasn't been too bad.
Well, today was the first day it wasn't 100 here.
Oh, okay.
It's last week.
Yeah, well, I put a whole house fan in yesterday, and that seemed to work pretty well.
What is a whole house fan?
It's a big, high-powered fan. You put it in your wall. It blows air up into your attic, and then it blows all that hot air out of the attic. In the meantime, it creates a breeze in the house. Of course, it's only as good, at night your temperatures drop.
Right.
So you're going to want to put it on around 8, 9 o'clock, pull that cool air in. And then in the morning, early morning, like it gets around maybe 60 degrees at like 5, 6 a.m., then you put it on again. And then you pull all that cold air in and blow all the hot air out.
But you don't have air conditioning?
Oh, yeah, I got air, But this is a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
So right now I have the air on. Because I'm in between, the two cycles. So somewhere around 9, 10 o'clock, I'll put that fan on again. So then I can turn the air off.
Oh, okay. So you haven't been listening. I just had a great call.
Oh, yeah. No, I did listen, actually. Yeah.
That was real interesting. I'm glad he called.
Yeah, well, I'm glad anytime you get some new callers in. I don't like to doubt.
Well, we got lots of listeners.
Well, that's good. I mean, we need to encourage them to come in there, So, well, I did get your message. Let's see. I wrote on Facebook, one of the greatest delusions in the world is the hope that the evils in this world are to be cured by legislation.
And I wrote...
You wrote, talk about this tonight on Norm at Night.
Okay.
So,
read your statement again.
Okay. One of the greatest delusions in the world is the hope that the evils in this world are to be cured by legislation.
That's right, that we can legislate morality.
Oh, right. Well, we already know that doesn't work, so.
Well, there's a question whether we really even try to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe we just try to legislate the rich.
Well, you've got to look at legislation. I mean, some of it is benign, and the rest of it is simply a matter of, the violent threat. Government threatens you and you obey. I mean, that's about it, right?
That's what Hobbes said.
Yeah, well, would I pay my taxes without a threat? It's hard to say. Depends on the level of the threat, you know?
You know what? I don't think anybody would.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this company, this country was founded by people who didn't want to pay their taxes.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, so even, you know, without getting too far off the topic, you know, I think this is one of the things I think, and you'll probably disagree, but, you know, that's rather normal. But
that's what makes the Norman Night Show fun.
So I think that I think more on the left than the right, or let's say more Democrats than Republicans, I think Democrats have more, and I use this word, faith in government than the others. Although there's a blend there. I mean, we're talking probably only on the far ends of the political spectrum. You know, because it seems that, you know, whenever there are, you know, like great social programs and that, I mean, you know, the Democratic leadership, the presidents, you know, going back to Kennedy or even as far back as FDR, they had tremendous confidence in their ability to do these things. And sometimes they worked and sometimes they didn't. But you know, that I think is the delusion.
You know, I mean, actually, it's interesting because I've been thinking about FDR a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 16% unemployment rate in his third term.
Oh, yeah, you know.
In his third term!
Yeah, I don't think that the unemployment rate is going to have much effect on this race by any means, you know. I really think it's going to get down to character issues, meaning that
really?
I think that's where it's going to go. And especially, remember, you know, there aren't that many areas to hit Romney except character. Because he's, you know, the guy's squeaky clean. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't screw around. You know,
he just puts his money in Swiss bank account.
And that's where the character issue is going to come in. I don't know what the hell he's going to do about that, because he's not going to, nobody's going to let go of it, you know, on the Democrat side. So,
you know, nobody.
And the other is the guy is wound up so tight. You know, this is not a relaxed man. This is not a man who enjoys being with people. That's not him. I mean, you can tell.
I mean, this man is a Mormon.
Yeah,
I don't think you can ever forget that. I could not be comfortable in this country if I was a Mormon.
Oh, well,
I never know when the crackpots are coming to get me.
Yeah, well, see, I've actually, you know, worked with Mormon people, and I had a Mormon boss once, and, you know, I kind of know what they're like, you know. And, you know, I mean, I don't have a problem with them, you know. If you had magic underwear and imaginary friends, no problem. I mean, Catholics have imaginary friends, too.
Oh, hey, Catholics out there, 347-945-6713. Come on and tell us about your imaginary friend, your guardian angel.
Yeah, well, you're either on a cell phone or you're talking to yourself or you're praying, whatever it is. I don't know.
You know, what's praying besides talking to an imaginary friend, right?
Well, you know, if people want to do that, I'm fine with it, you know. You obviously don't impose it on me, but I won't stop you from doing it. I mean, that's what you do. Okay?
You'll sit back and enjoy it.
I mean, I talk to my cats. I swear at my plants when they don't grow fast enough. You know, all kinds of things. I yell at the microwave when it's not working fast enough. So, you know, I'm not much different. So.
Well, the cultist just posed a question for Norman Knight. Who has more imaginary friends, the Catholics or the Mormons?
Yeah. Oh, I think they do. Because they got all those extra planets that they put up there. You know, depending on what level you progress to. You know, see, everybody escapes from hell.
Does anybody know?
Yeah, well, they have these planets. And depending on your degree of, you know, goodness, you either get to sit with God, which is the best, and then there's like one in the middle for, you know, you almost made it. It's like the Special Olympics planet. And then there's one for the people who didn't do anything, but we aren't going to send you to hell. We'll put you on this. Probably something similar to Earth, you know. So.
Oh, my God. I think to myself, how could we have a president who thinks these things? And then I think about what Catholics think.
Well, yeah. You know. Well, even, you know, I mean, I'm watching George W., right? And he goes to Saudi Arabia. And he's holding hands with the sheikh. And they're walking down this, you know, walking around holding hands. And then they kiss each other. And I'm sorry, that I don't want my president doing that. That's not good. You know? And then if he bows, everybody jumped on Obama for bowing to the Japanese emperor. Oh, look what he did. But he didn't suck his
face. Who was the first lady that did Nancy Reagan curtsy to the queen?
I don't know. I know Nixon bowed to the emperors and sheiks and whatnot. I don't remember if the Obamas met Queen Elizabeth.
Somebody got in trouble for that.
Well, yeah, they gave her like an iPad for a gift. And she was like, what the hell am I going to do with that? You know, she was expecting, you know, some little knick-knack or something gold or silver, and you give her an iPad. Oh.
Hey, guest 15524, why don't you call in? 347-945-6713 is the number. Join the conversation on Norm at Night.
Anyway, getting back to government. Let's see. And the topic that I brought up there. Here's a problem I have with government, especially big government like we have,
uh-huh.
is that politicians and most people think of problem solving as there being, you know, problems and solutions, which works really well in the academic world. Because you say, here's the problem, and then the students solve it, and there's your solution, right? But see,
uh-huh.
in government, it doesn't work like that. All you get is trade-offs. You move something from one place to the other, and you think you've solved the problem. But because it's a trade-off, every time you move money here, you're screwing somebody else, right? I'll give you an example.
I'm listening. I don't know if I agree with that, but I'm listening.
Okay, I'll give you an example. What was the first tax increase that Obama signed? Hadn't been in office more than a week or two. $1 tax on tobacco, right? Dollar pack. And that was for S-CHIP. That was to supplement health care for families who made too much money to get Medicaid but couldn't afford insurance. Okay, so we tax cigarettes a dollar to give them money. Now, the problem isn't that they have problems paying health care. The problem is that they made too many babies. Babies that they can't afford to take care of. But
so
here's what we do.
To kill the babies?
Right. No, no. Here's what we do. We take the money from the smokers, the tobacco tax, and we give that to health care for the children. Now, what does that do? Cause and effect. Those people get money for health care, probably make more babies because now they can afford health care. But where did the money come from? Do you think it just came from tobacco companies? Because we know it didn't. We know it came from smokers. And as we identify who they are, we find low-income minorities dominate smokers in America. So what we're doing now is all of these families, some of whom may be on Medicaid themselves and cannot afford health insurance, we're going to charge them a dollar. Let's say they smoke a carton a week, which is probably typical. So $520 a year is taken from the poorest segment of the population. And what does that mean? Now, they could quit smoking, but it's not that likely. More likely, their children have $520 less food and clothing that year. You see where I'm going with this?
I'm listening.
But you see what I'm saying? You know, you've traded it off. You've traded, you know, the
right.
well-being.
It's like
we've traded
lottery.
The well-being of this group for the well-being of another group.
It's like lotteries being taxation of the stupid.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. Well, look at the percentage of, again, who buys lottery tickets? The majority. Who spends like 9% of their income on lottery tickets? You know, just go to the poorest neighborhoods in town. There's your
just
market.
Just go to 7-Elevens.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then what stores are in these neighborhoods? 7-Eleven, AM/PM. Who has the highest prices in town for nearly everything? AM/PM, 7-Eleven. Who has the least healthy food? You know, we can go on now with that. You know.
Right.
And it's not all government. There's a lot of factors involved here. But all I'm saying, you know, and, you know, the point I wanted to make as far as government goes, you know, if you take it from one ear, you're just shuffling things around. But somebody will suffer for whatever good thing you did. Now we can look at Obamacare. Now, some people are going to pay for this, and some people aren't. So where's that cost going to go? Now, if I, let's say, I impose a 2 or 3...
Theoretically, everyone can buy insurance and then nobody pays.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want it, you want to do, you know, a universal single-payer system. I mean, of course, we're not going there. We're going to do something different.
We could.
Yeah, but that there's no doubt in my mind that, one, young people who probably wouldn't buy health insurance, they're going to be the first hit. And the other is people who have existing policies through their employer or if they pay for it themselves, their rates are going to go up too. No doubt in my mind there. If all the pharmaceuticals are being taxed an extra 2-3%, and the device makers and the HMOs, rates go up. No other way for that to happen. It's just going to go that way.
But that's
the thing that
true.
Really worries me, and again, here's our trade-off, is Medicaid. Now, if 15 million people suddenly show up on the doorstep and say, we have Medicaid, who the hell's going to take care of them? There's nothing there. Where are they going to go? I don't know where they're going to go. Unless they're going to, you know, they're going to wait even longer, you know, 6 to 8 months just to get an appointment? That could very well be the case.
See, I don't believe in all that.
I can't. Oh, I can barely hear you now.
Oh, sorry. I moved away from the microphone. I don't believe that it will take all that time for someone to get an appointment. Only if you operate in a system where you get an appointment.
Yeah, but that's what they do.
How about you show up and they wait on people till everybody's taken care of?
Oh, well. You mean just show up in an emergency room and sit there and wait?
Or
see, I've seen some of that. I've seen that with, like, dental services. We have a, I think it's called Western Dental, and it's a very low-cost dental operation. And literally, I mean, I've never been in there. I've never used them. But I see 40 and 50 people sitting on those nasty plastic chairs, you know, waiting. And you know a lot of these people are in pain. And they can't have had appointments because there's 50 of them in the freaking room. So, yeah, you know, that is what you're going to see. You know, just rooms of people waiting to get in. Yeah, of course.
Or we're going to make more doctors.
Well, that would be good.
Or more nurse practitioners.
Yeah, see, we have a good supply of nurses, actually, on a national level. We still have a shortage
maybe
of folks.
California, they do.
Yeah, and we have a we don't have a shortage of nurses here because they pay so much money. But doctors, nationally, we do have a shortage, you know, as compared to any other Western, you know, developed nation.
Well, the fact is, the doctors keep the number of doctors small artificially.
I don't know. You're saying, you know, we should be increasing our supply of physicians every year. I mean, population is growing, right?
Right, but the AMA is not allowing it.
Okay.
You know what determines the number of doctors we make every year?
I'm not sure. I'm sure it's not supply and demand, though.
No, it isn't. According to my uncle, who is knowledgeable in the field, Dr. Herbert P. Constantine, it's the number of anatomy tables that are available in the medical colleges.
Oh, well.
You can't accept more students than you have anatomy tables.
Oh, okay.
Because they got to cut up bodies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know we University of Davis is now about 40 miles away. And that's a big med school. But they also have a big veterinary college. And I've seen these rooms. They're enormous. I mean, incredible lecture halls where everybody's got a dead cat or a dog or something, and they're all cutting at the same time, you know. And but I imagine human bodies, well, there probably aren't as many of those around.
All right, well, that's been a great night, and we'll leave it on the lecture halls full of dissected cats.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that everybody comes back next week.
Yeah.
We had a couple of good conversations on politics and legislative morality and school and knowledge. And it was a great night on Norman Night. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, man.
Coming.
Take
All
care.
Right.
Have a good
Bye.
Night. Bye-bye.
Thanks.